Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is May 5th, 2010, and we'd like to wish everyone a happy Cinco de Mayo, and be careful tonight, don't drive drunk. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd, and our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have our guest, Miss Alicia Curtis-Webster, coming to us tonight from Washington State. She's going to tell us the story about her 16-year-old son who was shot and killed by his so-called gang mentor after only being in the gang for about a month. But Alicia's story goes much deeper than that, and she's going to tell us about her life tonight. And before we talk to her, I'd like to welcome Boyd to the show, and Boyd has some great news to share with everyone. Hi, Boyd.
I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in like you always do on Wednesday. And, right now, feeling on top of the world, my oldest son finally got out of prison the day after 15 years in prison. He's 31 years old now. He's been gone since 17. So right now I'm on top of the world and just looking forward to helping him back in society on a great recovery. And it's going to be a process, but, God is good. So we're going to get right down to the nitty-gritty with the show, and we're going to turn the mic over to Miss Alicia and ask her to formally introduce herself, and we're going to get the show rocking.
Well, hi, you guys. Thank you very much for having me on the show tonight. Good to hear from you guys, and I'm glad. I just want to say thank you to you for everything that you guys do and for keeping, everybody informed. My pleasure. So I'm here tonight to tell you a little bit about my story and then also share my story about my son, Terrell, who was, like you said, killed when he was 16. Got involved in gang violence in gangs and got himself killed. Guess myself, I am originally from the Midwest. I'm from Rockford, Illinois. I'm one of altogether 10 siblings. Seven of us from the same parents, and then I have three half sisters. My mom and dad got together in the 50s. my mom being white, my dad black, so, back then it was kind of not the thing to do, but they got together, and so it was, just that in itself caused some conflict, in the family. So my mom's family disowned her, so just getting together, having seven biracial kids, caused some problems. And so just from that, I don't know any of my white relatives, and so that was a kind of a hard thing growing up, with the racial tension and stuff. And
that had to be real hard,
It wasn't a popular thing, there weren't a lot of biracial kids in those days, so school was tough and really finding your way and your discovering who you are is tough, and so it was kind of rough. And my parents ended up getting divorced when I was about 8 years old, so my mom was left with all seven of us. And as you can imagine, or I can imagine it, just being hard on her. And so she gave us up into foster care.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, after like the age of eight, I went in, we all went into foster care and were split up. And so we really didn't, you know, after that point, didn't live together for any length of time at all. And so that, you know, my own story, and all of my brothers and sisters have their own story of, you know, experiences they had growing up in foster care. But my
where do you
story,
fall in that seven children? Which number are you?
I am third from the top. So I have an older sister and an older brother. And then there's
okay.
me, and then four younger. Yeah. And I don't know, I lost track of how many foster homes I even stayed in because, you know, like I said, I didn't know any of my white parents. So I grew up, you know, 8 years with just knowing my dad's side of the family. So once they put us in foster care, I went to a lot of white families. So I struggled because I didn't identify and, you know, I was already very dysfunctional as a child and, you know, at that point full of rage and angry. And so I fought a lot. I got in a lot of trouble, you know, and
right.
So I got kicked out of a lot of places. And so I ended up just bouncing around. And then I ended up in one family that I, you know, related the most to, which was a black family. However, the son was molesting me. But I was there 2 or 3 years. But, I mean, it was really a kind of a crazy story because that was the most comfortable place for me just because it was with people that I could relate to. And so it kind of felt like home even though, you know, I was being tortured. Kind of
right.
a sick kind of reality. Then at one point in that home, my mom was in and out of drug rehab and stuff. She was having issues, you know, just trying to deal with life. And so she was, you know, in and out of drug rehab and got in trouble for forging checks and stuff. So she was getting ready to go to prison. And she got out on bail and decided to come and get her kids and try to run away, I guess, and, you know, live happily ever after. Well, she came
mm-hmm.
and picked us up from foster homes. They called it kidnapping, but, you know, of course, we went willingly. And
right.
took us all to Benton Harbor, Michigan. Am I going too fast? Or?
No.
I know it sounds like a motion picture or something. I know. I swear one day I'm going to have somebody write a movie.
Right, you're going just straight. You know what I mean? Getting it off your chest, you know?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
So anyway, we end up in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And, you know, I think one of her friends drove us, so she had a little bit of money for the first few weeks, but then we ended up just, you know, finding different people to live with. We ended up sleeping on the beach for a little while, and I think we were in a mission at one time, and just kind of crazy. You know, my mom and I think there was the five of us kids, the oldest, you know, running
around. So as you got older, Alicia, as you got older with this situation, you know what I mean, how did you handle that when you thought you got into a grown stage of life and you started having children of your own? How did that affect you in any kind of way of what you had already been through, or how did that convert over?
Oh, yeah, it did. Well, I wasn't grown when I started having kids. I got pregnant when I was 15 with my first son. And so I had my first son when I was 16. And then I got pregnant again at 16 and had my second son at 17. So I had two kids by the time I was 17. And I was on my own. I'd been on my own since like 14. You know, finally they just released us. You know, the state just released us. And so I had two kids when I was 17. And I just, you know, really, even though it was very, very hard, but I really think that was what stopped me dead in my tracks and really saved me, because it forced me to turn my life around and get serious and start thinking about what I was doing, you know, because I was just out there just, you know, doing whatever, just, you know, finding my way.
But you were young.
And
you were
really,
13, 14.
Yeah, I was young. I didn't have any direction. Yeah, I hadn't had any guidance or direction, so I was just, you know, finding my way through life. But when I had my kids, I was like, okay, I don't want them to grow up like I did, you know. Yeah. So I started trying to turn things around. I got a job, and I worked. You know, I worked in a factory for, you know, for, yeah, I've always worked since I was, I think my first job, I was 18, and I just have always worked. So, I mean, it was hard. You know, I made a lot of mistakes with my two boys, but I, you know, did what I could. I did the best I could because I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to give them up. I said they would never go through with the things that I went through.
Right.
So I really think, you know, they saved my life.
You kind of got your ground. I said they got you grounded and so
they
then
did.
You kind of
Yeah. Do
what you had to do after that.
Yeah. You make it happen. You know, you have no choice. I was
right. Determined
to give them a better life. So I worked, and I think my two boys were 10 and 13 when I met my first husband, who was stationed here in Washington. And so that's what brought me. I was 27 at that time. I was 27. I met him. And he brought me here to Washington, and we got married, and that's how I ended up here.
Mhm. So after you got married and everything, you had already had the two children, correct?
Yeah, I had my two boys. I had raised my two boys up until 27 when I got married, and then we all three of us moved here, and I got married.
Okay. So as you went on through life in your 20s now you're married and now you the boys is up of age to a certain age, did that any of your past affect your future as far as you get married or anything like that? Did that boil over into your future from what you had lived in the past, any?
Yeah, you know, at that point, I mean, I still had no idea what the heck I was doing. I definitely didn't know anything about being married. Honestly, when I, you know, when that was brought to me, when he said he wanted to get married, my first thought was, yes, I'm getting my kids out of here, you know, because where I was from, Rockford, was, you know, just a little hick town where, you know, nothing going on, no future for anybody. So that was my first thought, I'm getting my kids out of here. And then, you know, I was young still, 27. I didn't know anything about being married or what it took or any of that. So, yeah, we struggled a lot. And,
I'm listening to you. You know, I just said, yeah, you know, because that was a great, great struggle for any woman, you know what I mean, that has done, you know, walked the shoes you had walked. And then even in your 20s, you know, you still hadn't learned a lot like
yeah.
you should have what you're saying
you
because
know,
you were still used to all the BS going on, you know?
Yeah, pretty much then you just learn from experience. You learn from making mistakes, you know, and what not to
yeah.
do. So I got here. I have to say this place was totally different for me. This was like a whole new world. You know,
mm-hmm.
Washington is so different from Illinois. You know, it's a beautiful state. You know, people are doing things. They're, you know, there's the mountains here and the water. And so it was just really beautiful. So it just that alone opened my eyes up, you know, to bigger and better things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so what did you do now, Alicia, at this point in your life?
What did I do?
Yeah, what kind of work do you do now at this
right.
point in your life?
Well, when I first got here, I worked retail for 10 years, and then I went from retail to insurance. I'm in the insurance industry. I've been with the same company for the last 12 years now.
Okay, great, great, great.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn the mic over to the missus and let her ask you what she needs to ask.
Okay.
Let's go back a little bit. When you were being molested by your foster brother, did you tell anybody what was going on?
You know, I didn't. I was so emotionally messed up and confused that I didn't, because I, for one, didn't think they would believe me. And I honestly didn't want to leave that home, because that was, you know, I didn't want to go to another place where they would put me where I, you know, knew that I wouldn't like, or I was just scared. And I, you know, I didn't think that they would believe me anyway, because it was her son. And so, no,
I
didn't.
Did they have other children? How many children did they have?
She had, there was the mom, or the lady, we called her Aunt Margaret. She told us to call her Aunt Margaret. She had a daughter and a son that lived with her, older. They were like late 20s. And then she had myself, my little sister, my little brother, were foster kids.
Okay.
So she had the three of
them. So the son that molested you was quite a bit older than you.
Yeah, he was, like I said, late 20s, I believe. Big John was his name.
And you were how old?
Call him out. Let's see, I probably was 12. Yeah, I was probably 12 by the time I got there, yeah. And he, I can't blame him on alcohol or drugs. He wasn't doing either one of those. He was just sick.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a straight-out poser, period.
Yeah, you know, it was weird. I don't know if you want me to go into it, but it was just weird. I mean, he never said anything about it. He never talked about it. It just was something that happened almost pretty much every night. You know, it just happened, and it was never talked about. And then when my mom picked us up from that foster home, you know, when we got caught in Benton Harbor, when they caught us and sent us back, well, that family didn't want me to come back, didn't want us to come back. So I just never went back to that home.
Do you think that they knew? Do you think that his parents knew?
I don't think his mom knew. I think his sister might have known, because she and I shared a room. We slept in bunk beds, and so she was always in the room. So I think she knew. And she, you know, she was crazy too. She would, you know, tease my brother, my little brother. She would tease him and, you know, do things to him. And so it was just a crazy, crazy family.
Right.
Wow. And so many kids go through that. And like you said, they don't get a chance to express it to someone, because once again, like kids say, they feel that they might not be believed, you know? And kids be afraid, you know what I mean? And that's why, you know, we thank you for breaking your silence with this, because whoever listening to the show tonight, we would like you all, if anybody's going through this, we ask you to break your silence on this, because it won't be heard, you know? So open up and let's get it going on. You know, we're speaking out about this, you know?
Yeah, and you can talk. I mean, I could have talked to teachers. You know, I could have said something. And we went to church every Sunday. You know, that family was, like, her brother was a pastor. Our church was, like, right next door. So we went to church every Sunday, you know. So you have to tell somebody. Because I'm sure if he did it to me, he was doing it to other foster kids. And, you know, for after me, there may have been others.
I'm sure. Until somebody finally told, maybe.
Even afterwards, you know, years later, I tried to, you know, see if I could find that family or find him to see, you know, but I never could find them.
Right. So, ladies and gentlemen, go ahead.
I was just going to say, did you ever get any counseling for that, or how were you able to work through that?
No,
being molested is pretty, I mean, it kind of lowers your self-esteem, and it, you know, you just kind of feel dirty and cheap, and I mean, I don't know, how were you feeling?
I felt all of that. You know, I had very low self-esteem from the beginning, you know, just from growing up and being, you know, biracial and, you know, not really being able to understand who I am, you know, just because I didn't feel like, you know, any of my mom's relatives, you know, cared for me. So I already had low self-esteem. And so, yeah, I never got counseling for that, or, you know, I just kind of dealt with things on my own.
Just kind of work and care of your kids for a while until... Because you obviously worked and took care of your kids for, I mean, all those years. And there were 10 and 13 before you met your first husband, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened to the father of your son?
Well, my first husband wasn't the father of my son. You mean
right.
My son's father's son?
You got pregnant as a young teenager. So, I mean,
well, they both had different fathers, and they both lived in Rockford, Illinois, and we never really had. Well, my oldest son, his father and I had a relationship. My youngest son, Terrell, he and I, we never had a relationship. It was just one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when we left Illinois, my son's dad stayed there. We were never married, or, you know, we had broken up by then. So they were back there. My son has a relationship with his dad still to this day.
That's good.
But so then when I got here, got married, and, you know, did that for 7 years. We were married, and then that marriage ended. I had a daughter from that marriage, my daughter, Tiana, who's 20 now. So then I had my two sons and my daughter, Tiana, living here. And got divorced, and probably 2 years after I was divorced is when my son was killed.
Okay, so you guys moved to Washington, he was 10 when you guys moved to Washington?
Yeah, Terrell was 10. Eric was 13.
So he was still in junior high, or younger than that?
The boys, they were, they went to middle school here, and then started junior high and high school.
Okay.
Also here. And so Terrell was 16. They both went to the same high school. This time, Terrell was 16, Eric was 17, and just graduated, or was just getting ready to graduate. They both went to the same high school, played sports. You know, they were both really good athletes. Terrell played basketball, football, and was in track, all three. And so, you know, both really, really good kids. You know, Terrell, they were both really, really good boys. You know, never got in trouble. Everybody loved them. They had hundreds of friends and, you know, went to all the school events and games. And Terrell really, really loved basketball. And the school he was going to, you know, I guess he didn't think they had a very good basketball program. So he wanted to transfer to another school, which we did. We moved from one side of town to the other so he could start a new high school and, you know, get more playing time. So he thought at this new high school. So that's what we did. And he started, you know, of course, meeting new people and getting connected to some different friends and stuff. And it really, like I said when I talked to you guys before, it really happened so fast. It's like we transferred schools, he started playing basketball, you know, and at the point where he started, I could see things were starting to change. It was like all within a month.
So did he transfer in the middle of school year to play basketball, or was it?
He, before
the school year started.
It was like the end of winter, I think. It was probably just the basketball.
Mid-year basketball season.
Yeah. I think it was like December.
Yeah. Did he have friends over there before he moved? Do you think? Or
yeah, he did. I mean,
basketball.
Yeah, he did, and they were, you know, he was a popular kid, so he knew kids all over the city. Tacoma's not that big, so he knew kids all over the city, you know, and all the different schools. So, yeah, I'm sure he had friends there that said, you know, told him about the basketball program. Plus, they went to all the games.
We played against a lot of them then.
Exactly, yeah. So we transferred here, and, you know, he started just having some different friends, and I started noticing that he started staying out later, you know, and he had a curfew, so I would, you know, get on him about, you know, being late, past curfew and stuff, and so then he, you know, started sneaking out, started climbing out his window, you know, we lived on the first floor, and so I found out he was, you know, climbing out his window, so I nailed his window shut.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So
I ain't heard that one in years. I nailed the window shut.
Oh yeah, I nailed the window shut. Yeah. But you know, he was still going out, and it was like four or five weeks after that, from the beginning where, you know, I started getting on him about being late, that I nailed the window shut, that just one night, middle of the night, knock at the door. You know, and I get up and answer the door, and I see two police officers at the door, and I'm, you know, I said, I'm seeing my first thought. It's okay, what did he do? He did something. They have him. So I asked him, you know, do you guys have him? He's not here. I knew they were there for Terrell. Mm-hmm. And they just said, can we come in? And so I opened the door. They came in, and, you know, first words out of their mouth is, we're sorry to inform you. And you know, that's all I hear. It's like an out-of-body experience. I could just hear myself scream, and that was it. You know, they told me that he had been killed. He was, you know, the next day it was, like I said, Tacoma's not that big, so it's all over the news and in the newspapers. You know, young teen, you know, shot execution style. Of course, drug and gang related, first thing they always say.
Right, and there was two other people you said with him as well.
Yeah, at first they only knew about my son. They found him in a certain area of Tacoma, and then it wasn't until a few hours later that they found two other kids in another location in the same car, and so they had all been shot. And then when the guy turned himself in, they were all actually friends, you know, and they claimed they were all in the same gang. This one certain area of town is called Hilltop, and they were all Hilltop Crips. And the oldest one, the one who supposedly was mentoring my son, got him in the gang, is the one that shot all of them and killed them all.
Right, and I think you said he was about 10 years older than all of them.
Well, my son was 16. The oldest one was 24. Yeah, he was 24, one that shot him. And the other kids
he out there thinking that he's running with some cats that's on his team, but really they all against him in the first place.
Well, I never got, because I never talked to anybody to get, you know, I didn't go out there trying to get their answers, and my son was gone, and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, nothing's going to bring him back. So I didn't get all the details from everybody, but what they said was either either it was a drug deal gone bad, which was probably not. They said that this guy that killed him was on drugs, on PCP, and, you know, lost his mind or whatever. Then the other thing they said was that Terrell disrespected a gang leader or something, and the older guy shot him, and then he killed the other two because they were witnesses. So I never really got the story about what actually happened that night. Yeah.
So did you say one time to me that you thought that maybe Terrell decided that wasn't for him and was trying to back out?
I think that he did, because he had no idea what he was getting himself into. He had, you know, prior to moving to that area and him getting involved with that, they had never been around gangs or that lifestyle. So I know that he didn't know what he was getting himself into. So I think once he saw how serious it is out there and it's not a game, that he was wanted to get out.
Right. Yeah, he probably realized he had too much going for him, especially if he was a good athlete and, you know, had all his friends and
the things that you have to do when you're out there. I mean, you can't just be out there and be, you know, a role model. You have to prove that you're, you know, you can be trusted by them. So who knows what he, you know, had to do out there on the street.
Right. Or what he didn't want.
There's always something when it comes to that gang thing, you know?
Yeah. The guy that killed them all was not playing. I mean, he killed them all, you know, they said execution style. I mean, it was close range with the 9mm multiple times, so he wasn't playing.
Right.
You know, so it's not a game, and it's very serious. You know, gang life is serious.
Yeah.
And we want everybody who's out there listening in the radio land to listen to exactly what Miss Alicia just spoke on, you know. If you're trying to run with these gangs out here and you don't know what you're getting yourself into, if you ain't never lived that life and just thinking that's something to be cool in, you're sadly mistaken, my brothers and sisters, you know. It could be easy you getting your life took. So we hope you're taking heed to exactly what she's saying tonight. And we got a great, great show, and we're going to keep bringing the real to you. And we're going to go to a commercial and a song, and we're going to be right back with our guest tonight, Miss Alicia, in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
Yeah. LD. You know, far too often, we look back in hindsight and wish, say, I wish I just had one more chance.
Write my future like a book as I turn another page as the lights go down. I walk across the stage, rub the law full up, but more importantly, I pray that everything will be okay. And somehow I know it is. All I gotta do right now is get through this bullshit. Keep my chin to the sky, bring my back against the wall. Fuck out, I will fight, scratch and claw, and still stand tall in the belly of the beast. Be afraid of nothing in this world, we got 2 feet. Sometimes I
see those lips if I forget my sleep. But that's why I hit my knees soon as I leave the sheet. No more waiting. Life is not a game. Sometimes you might not get a second chance. Life is too short. Cherish what you got. Don't be jealous of others. Do for your damn self.
Kingpin Rob Boyd, a must-read book. This book will be available online worldwide to order at thestreetsdontloveyouback.name.com, at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, indiebound.org, and borders.com. Also available in Detroit at Harlem World Books and Videos, and at Human Bookstore on Frederick Douglass Boulevard. It's everywhere, so go ahead and order your autographed copy today. The streets don't love you back.
Yeah, welcome back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. Like we said, we got the hot topic tonight with our young lady, Miss Alicia out of Washington. And we're going to turn the mic back right back to the message.
Okay. Alicia, I wanted to go back a little bit. Well, go way back, I guess. I think you're about our age, but growing up, being biracial, you know, back in the 60s, 70s as a young child, going through that, I mean, and it's still today, I mean, there's still a lot of racial tension as far as, you know, white and black marriages. But what could you tell people out there about how hurtful it is to others instead of being more accepting?
Well, you know, back then it was, well, the first thing was that, you know, my mom's family disowned her because she married a black man. And then, you know, the most, I guess, angry was the kids. You know, the kids at school were really the meanest. It wasn't really the adults; it was the kids. You know, and so.
And I found that had more white people or more black people.
Actually, it was probably both, but because, you know, they didn't understand. There wasn't a lot of biracial kids back then, and they didn't know me. And because of, you know, I didn't really talk a lot. I just kind of, well, I was a really quiet kid, and so I didn't, you know, stick up for myself or speak out. So they didn't understand me. They didn't understand who I was. So the white kids thought I was trying to be black, and the black kids thought I was, you know, trying to, you know, not be white. So, you know, I would get called the N-word or Oreo or, you know, stop trying to be like us, or You know, and so neither race wanted to befriend me because they both thought I was trying to be someone else, you know, and so I just, you know, kind of hung out by myself. So I would just, you know, I mean, these days, people, come on, it's 2010, you know, right. We have bigger issues.
But there are still a lot of people like that.
There definitely are. I still get looks because I'm so light-skinned. I still, you know, people still look at me, you know, twisted, you know, because
right. They
don't know who I am. But now I have a voice. You know, I'm older now, so.
Right. We learn as we get older.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I think it's a lot easier for the kids now because you have so many, you know, mixed races. At least here in Washington, it's very
more
diverse.
Common.
You know, it's more common, yeah. So, and I think the kids also, the kids are less, you know, they're not so stupid like we were back in the day. I think they're more accepting. And
right.
So hopefully, you know, when our grandkids grow up, the issue won't be there.
Right.
And that's my hope anyway.
That would be the day.
Yeah, because all the racists and bigots are dying off, you know, so... But yeah.
Yeah. So, and your brothers and sisters, and when you guys were, okay, so your dad left your mom with all you kids.
Mm-hmm.
And was she working? Was she working at the time, or did you have to go find
a
job?
I don't remember my mom ever working. I know my dad worked. I don't think my mom worked. I think she stayed home. She was a stay-at-home mom. And so when he left, I think she was probably just on public assistance or something and then just couldn't handle it.
Right. So the state kind of placed you guys in different foster homes?
Yeah.
Now, at that stage of life, I mean, and now at this point when she's not with your dad, does her family accept her back?
No, she never again talked to her family. Mm-mm. She had, there's, you know, I said seven of us all together. My dad had two daughters, so he was married to a black woman, so he has two all-black girls. My mom was married to a white man, so she has a white daughter. So I have two all-black sisters, one all-white sister, and then seven of us mixed. So she left.
Brothers and sisters?
Huh?
Are you close to your brothers and sisters?
I am now. Yeah, I am now. After you know, we all got out of the states, you know, weren't wards of the state anymore. We kind of filtered back to Rockford where we all started and, you know, kind of got to know each other. And, yeah, we're all close now. You know, I wish I could say that we're all living and thriving and, you know, successful, but there are some who are still struggling, you know, with drugs and alcohol and some in prison and, you know.
Right. You know, but put in that situation, you know, I was just thinking, I was trying to put myself in your situation as a young child and going through that. And you know, your mom is struggling and I don't know when she started using drugs, but at one point you said she was having issues with drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I could just picture you on the street trying to, I mean, hustle or even sell drugs or I don't know if you've ever had to prostitute or anything like that, but I know a lot of people end up doing that kind of thing just to survive, being out there alone, trying to make ends meet and, you know, not having a place to stay at night and not knowing where you're going to go, not knowing where your next meal is going to come from.
Right. I remember being really poor. I remember we have, you know, the kids would go out and steal. I remember that, steal food or whatever. I remember my mom, you know, when she still had us in the house, she had a lot of, you know, friends, uncles, you know, that would help pay bills and stuff. And so I don't know what my brothers were doing. I know my brothers went fishing a lot for dinner. We had fish, you know, out of the river, you know. So I know we struggled, and I know, you know, we went to school raggedy, and, you know, part of the reason kids would laugh at us and stuff. Then I know my mom was using drugs. She turned us on to drugs, you know. She turned us on to speed and taught us how to forge checks. You know, that's why she ended up going to jail. So, you know,
wow.
There was a lot of stuff. Yeah, there was a lot of craziness
like,
going on.
A lot of criminal activity in the house, huh?
Yeah, and they, my parents both drank. So, you know, eventually they both became alcoholics. So, you know, we were just kind of just doing our own thing.
Everybody for themselves. Every man for themselves
yeah,
at that
pretty
moment.
Much. Yeah, pretty
and
much.
And that's why kids that go through things like that, that don't have, I mean, it's hard enough having just one parent, but when you don't have either parent there for you continuously as a positive influence, you know, telling you what needs to be done and
yeah,
you know, supporting
yeah.
you, you know, it's no wonder, I mean, that, like you said, some of your family is having struggles still and some, you know, some
yeah.
are in jail and some
yeah.
are, you know.
Yeah, you turn
you know,
to drugs or alcohol just, be, you know, to numb the pain or to, you know, try to take you out of reality temporarily. But like I said, when I had my kids, that kind of, that did something to my thinking. It, like, turned me around, you know. I didn't like to drink because I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be out of control. I wanted to be able to think clearly so I could take care of my kids. Or, you know, I did drugs for a little bit, but I never went too far because I didn't like, you know, not being able to think and focus. So that's why I never did either one, you know, for too long or too much.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I can't say that anything that I did, I never got counseling for anything. I never, you know, got help or support. I just did it. I just did what I had to do.
Right.
Did that. Because you knew right from wrong. You
just
need to get back to what was right.
Yeah.
So right now at this point in your life, you still never had any counseling. Obviously,
no.
I mean, counseling, I mean, it'll help because you're able to talk about it, but as long as you can, you know, talk about it with anybody, do you still have issues that you feel like you might need to deal with as far as maybe anger or resentment or the abuse or anything like that?
No, you know, I don't. I went to church for a long time, and that helped a lot, and I have good friends. I do a lot of writing. I think I told you guys I'm writing
that,
a book.
That helps.
You know,
yeah.
And I don't know. I just, you know, I don't have anger, you know, in my heart. I don't. My life's not destructive. You know, I love people. I encourage people. You know, I love, you know, talking to people, motivating people, you know, so I don't know. It's just God. It's not nothing I did. It's just God's watching over me, you know, directing my life, and I want to make good choices, you know, and it's all about
yes.
what you
and
want
you
for your life.
And having your kids as well, though, you made that choice that you needed to
absolutely,
walk
yeah.
the right path, be an example.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that, you know, right now people, if I could do it all over again, you know, I'd do things differently with my son. I would talk to him, you know, once the very second I noticed that he's going down the wrong path, you know, yeah, you got to be the mother and start laying down the law. But you also, you know, you got to be real with kids these days. You have to talk to them,
and
see what's going
right.
on. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you
have to start talking to your kids like that when they're small because you can't just sit them down when they're 16 and
right.
say, let's talk. I mean, it has to be
right.
something that they're used to and that they can feel like they can come to you. And I mean, and it just has to be a communication that you know, we need to teach our young children as they grow up,
yeah.
you know, that
yeah.
they'll know that they can talk about something.
Right, we do. And I think us, even as adults, and even for, you know, kids that aren't ours, we have to be mentors. And, you know, you have a lot of single women struggling, trying to raise men. You know, we need
yeah.
men to be mentors and, you know, even, you know, fathers, uncles, brothers, you know, teachers, pastors, whoever. We need to start reaching out to these kids, you know, even if they're not ours.
And that's real talk, you know.
Have to go back to the mentality that it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we, you know, when we were growing up, we had, you know, lots of aunts and uncles that were around that would put us in our place if we needed it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And even, you know, people from our church or people, you know, it was, that's just the way it was back in those days.
Right.
And you respected your elder. You didn't talk back to him. I mean, most
right.
of it.
But, yeah, I remember.
You know,
I can remember when if somebody died, it was a big thing. You know, especially if somebody got murdered, everything stopped. You know, people were shocked.
Yeah.
Nowadays,
right.
it's you know, we're not even surprised. You know, when we hear about death, you know, we live in such a violent society now. You know, it doesn't even shock
that.
Us.
Right.
Nothing shocks. Like you said, it's more. It doesn't have to be off-the-hook violence, you know what I mean? And violence
yeah.
has always been around in our society, but nowadays in this 2010 era, it's off the chain. And so many
mm-hmm.
young kids out here, they do not respect the parents, they do not respect the elders, they do not respect nobody, not even themselves. And that's where the game truly done got twisted out here. There's no respect
right.
among people.
Right.
Yeah.
No respect for human life.
Yeah. Well, you know, it feels like it's a lost cause, you know, and you can really feel like, you know, there's nothing we can do, but we really can't have that mentality. I mean, we have to do something, you know. We can't
exactly.
tolerate it. You know, it's
consuming our
young people. You know, we're killing our future.
Right, and that's a good thing that we have people out
that have no emotions and don't care about anything.
Yeah.
You know, everybody just for themselves in a fast food, fast paced, I want
mm-hmm.
it now society, and if I don't
right.
get it, I'm going to throw
yeah.
it until I do. And,
right.
You know, and back,
I mean,
you know, when we were kids, it seemed like we always had, you know, all of us sat at the dinner table and had dinner together and talked
yeah.
and did things and you know, nowadays it's rare, I think, to see families all sit down together because we're all so busy with, you know, everybody
mm-hmm.
trying to work, go to school and different schedules and, you know, but, you know, there comes a time when we have to sit down with our, you know, spouses and our children and just sit and even if you just have to sit quietly for 30 minutes
yeah.
until they start talking to you, you know, because sometimes you have to be quiet in order for someone else to talk. And
right.
so, you know, but just to have that communication, you know, with our kids.
Yeah. It's so important. And really, how has
all this affected your son and your daughter with Turo?
Well, my son, if it really affected him, my oldest son, when his brother was killed, he, you know, him had never been in any trouble or anything. And so when that happened, he, you know, tried to get in trouble so he could go to jail and get this guy who killed his son or his brother. So he did something illegal and thinking he was going to go to jail. When they threw the book at him, he committed his first offense, and they put him in prison for 17 months. So, so he was, you know, going to college and stuff, and when his brother was killed, he, you know, came and got in trouble and then, you know, kind of messed up his life, turned his life, you know, in another direction.
Upside down.
Yeah, so
he did a couple years
in prison, got out, and took him a minute, but he got back on the right track, and now he's here. He lives in Tacoma. He's doing really well. You know, he plays semi-pro football and has kids. He's a great dad, and, you know, he's a mentor. He coaches his son's football and basketball games.
Okay.
So he's doing really good, and he's a mentor for kids.
That's
my
a good man, isn't
it? Yeah, he's a good man. My daughter's doing well. She is graduated 2 years ago, and she goes to school in Florida. Now.
Great.
From home.
Yeah, she couldn't stand Tacoma. She could not wait to get out of here. You know, she says, Mom, I'm like a rose. She says, she tells me, I'm like a rose in cement. I got to get out of here. I'm like, go ahead, baby. Go. So, yeah, she's a very independent little woman. So she is taking care of business.
That's all right, then. You know, so shouts out to, yeah, I mean, the two kids and, you know, shouts out to the loved one that has been lost, you know. So,
yeah.
Any advice you'd like to give these young kids out here, Miss Alicia?
You know what? I know it looks glamorous out there. I know you're making money. I mean, you know, making a heck of a lot of money, more money out there slinging drugs than you would be at a, you know, minimum wage job. But it's not all about the money. You know, you want to live, too. You know, so.
Amen.
Yeah, you just, you know, it's about quality of life and, you know, your character. And don't follow, you know, the crowd. Be the leader. Don't be the follower. You know, our kids have to stand up and, you know, be courageous and not, you know, not follow somebody else. You know, use your brain. You know, create your own destiny. Don't follow somebody else's footsteps.
Right.
You know, and talk to somebody. You know, if you don't have parents, you can go to talk to a teacher or, you know, a relative or, you know, just find somebody who's got something going on and talk to them.
Yeah,
you know, call into the radio show and, you know, talk to these guys, talk to the boys. There are people out there who care.
Right.
Amen, amen. We're glad to you make that great statement, Miss Alicia. And once again, we definitely want to thank you for coming on the show and telling the people your story. And we're going to pass the mic back over to the missus.
All right, and we have about 2 or 3 minutes left. But, definitely want to thank you for joining us, Alicia, and, you know, definitely keep working on that book and, you know, just keep writing.
Absolutely. You guys will be one of the first to know when it's done. I'll give you both a signed copy.
Oh, we're waiting on it. We're waiting on it so we can promote it as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
You already know. Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And
thank you guys for having me on.
That's a lot of people. Yeah.
Oh, anytime, Mr. Mason.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
right. And
you guys take care. And
thank you. And, you know, you can join us on any of our shows. And
absolutely, yeah.
And
I
or anything, you know. And, of course, we see you on our website and on Facebook, so we're always in touch.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Have a great night.
And you too.
Okay, you too, Miss Alicia. God bless.
Okay, God bless you. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
We'd also just like to remind everybody to keep an eye open in July for Boyd's new book, Never Hit a Woman, and it's about violence and abuse and stopping the violence and abuse in our society, as we talked a little bit about tonight. And also, the Streets Don't Love You Back book is still on sale, as well as the soundtrack and the Streets Don't Love You Back magazine, which we are now going to be also have advertising in. So if you'd like to get in the magazine, let us know, and we'll hook you up with that. And next week we have a young guest from New Jersey, Mr. Deshaun Morris. He's the author of a book about his life as well, The War of the Bloods in My Vein, and he was blood affiliated from the time he was about 10 years old and on up, and to where he was headed for the NFL and ruined his career because the gang life, you know, caught up with him and he just couldn't get away from it. So join us next week. It's going to be an awesome story to listen to him as he's finally turned his life around and started having a family of his own. So we'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And we, again, like to welcome Michael home. You know, I'm glad that he's back reunited with his family. And
definitely.
Definitely. And then anything else, Floyd?
You know, once again, like the missus said, just be on the watch out for my new book coming out in July, Never Hit a Woman. And I'll also be on the watch out for the Wifey's book. She hasn't came with the title yet, but she has several to choose from. Her book will be educating a lot of young youths about these gangs out here. And if you ain't never been in now, don't even be trying to get in one, you know. So it's just a life learning lesson that we are trying to show young youths, because you got to be taught very, very young, not when you're 18 telling you right from wrong. You got to be taught that from the bell, you know. So just log on, check out our new magazine. We launching it next month, which is June, and that's the Streets Don't Love You Back magazine. And the magazine goes to federal and state prisons, and it's going to be where you can go pick it up in the store as well. You know what I mean? You can advertise in the magazine, and we're just going to keep bringing you great, great news and great, great positive things to do as well. So that's what it is.
And you can get any of these on our website at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com.
Have a great night.
Good night, guys.
And remember, the streets don't love you back. Good night.
Good night.
Give up some more, but I wanna give up. some more. Would you like me to wanna give up some more? In the morning time, in the morning, give up some more. In the evening time, in the morning, give up some more.